all. The first case for argument this morning is Utility Audit versus Horace Mann Service. Mr. DiNardo. You may proceed, Mr. DiNardo.
Thank you, and may it please the court. My name is Zach DiNardo, here on behalf of Utility Audit, the plaintiff appellant. Utility Audit filed a one-count complaint based on diversity jurisdiction in the district court, alleging that Horace Mann breached a contract by wrongfully refusing to pay Utility Audit a portion of the savings it obtained by following recommendations that Utility Audit made related to Horace Mann's long-distance services. Utility Audit later sought leave to amend the complaint to add a count based on quantum merit to recover the value of services, information that it provided to Horace Mann.
Mr. DiNardo, why couldn't you have brought the quantum merit claim earlier? The legal theory, of course, it seems to have been available to you from the very beginning. And Michelle's confession supported the theory, but her testimony didn't give rise to the claim.
Well, I think you're right. We could have brought that. I don't know why it was not brought initially. All I can say is, based on Michelle's testimony, it was clear that at that point, Horace Mann believed that the contract negotiations that Utility Audit had been involved in was not in fact covered by the contract, that only recommendations that named a specific provider would be covered by the contract. There are two really narrow issues before the court today that kind of cuts to the chase here. First of all, with respect to the breach of contract, is the term recommendation in the contract limited so that Utility Audit had to name a specific provider that Horace Mann then chose? But if the court reads the contract and determines that the term recommendation was not limited like that, then it should reverse the district court.
Well, let me just ask you this. Horace Mann states that Utility was paid for future savings from some recommendations. What recommendations? Because it seems to amount to about $10,000, because you state you were paid $15,000 in the audit of the past bills, and they state that you were paid $25,000 total.
I believe the only thing that we have been paid for, Your Honor, is the audit, for the audit function. There were two portions: the audit function that went back 5 years, and then there was a monitoring function that went forward a year. And what's at issue here is the monitoring function, where we would make recommendations, and I don't know if there's a discrepancy as to that, that we have been paid, obviously, for the audit work that we did.
Well, okay, you agree that you were paid $25,000 total.
I believe that's the case, yes.
Right.
Yes.
And you stated that you were paid $15,000 for the audit of past bills, so then it would be $10,000 for the recommendations, right?
I don't believe we've been paid anything for recommendations, Your Honor.
Okay. So where does that $10,000?
I think that was for the audit function, and that may have been a misstatement in the brief, Your Honor.
Okay.
Going back to the term recommendation, there is no dispute that there were recommendations made and followed. What Horace Mann has stated is that the recommendations did not qualify as a recommendation as it was intended in the contract. But if you look at the contract, the contract does not provide for any limitation on the term recommendation. It is undisputed that there were recommendations. The extent to which those recommendations led to savings should have been left to the trier of fact to determine. The second issue is on the quantum merit count, and I think the real question there for the court is, did the contract govern the entire relationship between the parties? If the court looks at the contract and determines that it did not govern the entire relationship between the parties, then the district court should be reversed.
Well, of course, the problem with the quantum merit claim is, you know, we've already talked about, was when it was brought.
Well, the lower court did not have an issue with when it was brought. It had an issue with the reason why it denied motion for leave to amend was that it deemed it futile because there was a contract between the parties that, according to the district court, covered the same subject matter. So based on that is why the district court denied the motion for leave to amend. However, the district court also stated, however, that it was undisputed that Horace Mann used the contract negotiation services of utility audit to obtain savings in the end, but simply stated that these services, these contract negotiations, were not recommendations. They weren't covered by the contract. And what utility audit submits to the court is, if that's the case, then there is a quantum merit claim here that the court should have allowed leave to recover the reasonable value of those services. Now, getting back to the recommendations that are undisputed here are, and this was according to the district court, is that when utility audit first looked at the long distance contracts, it said, you've got a bad deal here. You've got to get something different. You can renegotiate with NCI, the current provider. You can go to other alternative providers. But we recommend that you go out and get proposals from four or five providers so you can get information about the market and you know what's available out there. And I said, and then you need to, after you get these proposals, you need to meet with these providers, and you need to sit down with each of them separately, and we'll meet beforehand. We'll kind of get together a strategy here, and we'll be able to, that way, you'll be able to get the best
deal possible. Wasn't that all pretty self-evident, though, to your client? Is that the kind of advice he was really paying a lot of money to get?
Well,
we ought to reevaluate this thing? I mean, he knew that.
Again, I think what the question here is, when you get into the issues of the value of the recommendation, again, that is for a trier of fact to determine the extent that those recommendations, when followed, actually led to the savings. A jury could find that, in fact, those recommendations, even though they were followed, didn't lead to anything. They're certainly entitled to do that. What we suggest is that they should have been allowed to do that and decide that they did in fact lead to some savings. One other undisputed recommendation was that if they were going to switch, that they not do so until December 1st when the current contract expired because of the penalty provision. Carol Scholes, who was kind of in charge of this for Horace Mann, admitted that she wasn't even aware that there was a penalty provision. This, the court said, however, did not lead to future savings. I submit again that would be for a jury to determine because of the avoiding a penalty provision, I think, can be construed as savings to Horace Mann. I would like to address the kind of the main document that Horace Mann relies upon, and it's the May 12th report where utility audit does recommend MCI under certain circumstances. They tried to treat that as an unconditional recommendation of MCI and only MCI, and that's the only recommendation possible under the contract. But I believe looking at the contract or the report, it is conditional. It does state that if certain conditions are met, we think that you should go with MCI. And then later, however, there was a July 20th, 2000 correspondence to Carol Scholes from Utility Audit stating, you know, we've tried to kind of seal the deal with MCI. They're not living up to their commitments. They're not going to provide you with a livable contract. And so we think that you ought to switch to another provider now. And so basically what Horace Mann said, no, you can't do that. Once you've made that recommendation, that's it. But I don't believe that we submit that the actual contract is not so limited.
So there's a dispute between the two of you over what constitutes your client's final recommendation, all right?
Well, that is correct. And they submit that it was required to be in a final report within 90 to 120 days. We submitted that it's not as limited. There is a reference in the contract to reports being made within 90 to 120 days. However, it also indicates that reports are to be given as time goes on as additional savings come about or are discovered. And it's inconsistent with the fact that this monitoring function was to go on for a year. So if they were to monitor the contract for an entire year, how could they give a final report within 90 to 120 days?
Thank you, Mr. DiNardo. Mr. Hardwick?
May it please the Court. Good morning. My name is Roger Heidenreich. I represent the defendant, Horace Mann Service Corporation. Judge Rovner, I think I can answer some of the factual questions that you have raised earlier. $15,000 was paid in the past cost audit. That's in the record and also in the district court's opinion on summary judgment. $25,000 was paid in future savings for a total of $40,000. You can find that in Exhibit A to Horace Mann's summary judgment motion at page 166 of Mr. Behill's deposition, where he acknowledges the $25,000 was paid. So future savings were, in fact, paid here. I also believe that I have an answer to the question of why this wasn't raised immediately. And I think it's a matter of the way the litigation developed. Contract action was filed. I admitted the existence of the contract all the way along. A deadline came and passed. 5 months went by when they were supposed to file pleadings. It wasn't until the end of discovery, we were 12 days past the discovery deadline, and the dispositive motion deadline is looming, that we get this amendment. I believe this was filed because the handwriting was on the wall as to the contract.
Yeah, because, see, it seemed to me that if the contract didn't cover information, then sort of, you know, why not allow a quantum merit claim? Because it doesn't seem to conflict with the contract. It's admittedly a different subject matter. And I wondered whether you would have needed more discovery. In other words, I wondered what would you have needed at that point to defend the new claim?
Well, first I might say that I think it is exactly the same subject matter. All of the information and services that we are talking about are those things that were developed and presented to us in the course of the recommendation. That precise information and services are in the recommendation letters, the preliminary and final reports. It's precisely that subject.
Granted, it was the same subject area, but I understand your opponent's position is, well, we had discovery. After discovery, we could see how you could look at this case under a quantum merit theory rather than a contractual theory, i.e., the contract did not cover this sort of advice, and so we amended. Amendments after discovery aren't unusual.
Amendments after the discovery deadline, I think, are amendments 5 months after the period of time allowed are changing the entire theory of the case. I think that is unusual.
Five months after, what?
5 months after the deadline in which amendments to the pleadings were due. Amendments to the pleadings were due in May.
And was a specific date given by Judge Mills for that?
That's right. And the only piece of evidence, here's the one piece of evidence which justifies the change in theories. It's Ms. Scholl's deposition testimony. And what's always left out of that is the very last question that's asked to Ms. Scholl, because it was, and you can see in the question that Mr. Rolf, Mr. DeNaro's partner who was asking this, is trying to establish a quantum merit theory. And this is at page 73 and 74 of Ms. Scholl's deposition, and it's exhibit 22 of the of utility audit's summary judgment motion. The question was asked, so quite simply, if they were asking to be paid for something to do with contract renewal, was your response, why would we do that? You were just being a friend and helping us. He was trying to establish there was no contract. Here was Ms. Scholl's final answer on this subject. No, it wouldn't have been that simplistic. Mike's contract with Horace Mann didn't initiate action that resulted in an implementation and a savings. What Ms. Scholl is saying, she's coming back to the contract language, is that there's no implementation of a recommendation that resulted in future savings, and that's why he wasn't entitled to be paid. So I would have said that Horace Mann did not view it that probably he was entitled to be paid. All she was saying was that he was not entitled to be paid under the contract, not that there was not a contract that covered that subject matter. So the discovery wasn't anything new, and it's really an attempt to take what her final answer is. It cuts that out completely. Once you put it into context, Horace Mann never denied the existence of a contract. And the information and services that are pointed to are precisely what was done in complying with the contract. There's a very important provision in the contract here, too, that I think has to be kept in mind when assessing the quantum merit claim. And that is that there is a provision that says if a recommendation is not implemented, if not implemented, there will be no charge for future savings. That allocation of risk was identified in the contract. Now what utility audit wants to say is, well, I know you didn't implement the recommendation, but I'd still like to be paid because I did something that benefited you. They want to change that allocation of risk. They want to alter the terms of the contract through the quantum merit case, through the quantum merit claim. And the cases, Industrial Lift and the other Illinois cases on this, said that's precisely what you can't do with a quantum merit claim. So here's what Judge Mills is faced with. He gets a tardy claim. We have no dispute about the existence of the contract. And in fact, the motion to amend simply says, the evidence in the contract case also supports a quantum merit case. Well, it's the same evidence. It's the same subject matter. It's the same information and services. And by the way, Judge Mills did not just have before him the pleading. He also had extensive briefing from the parties and also then had the benefit of a record developed through discovery. We not only briefed this before the magistrate, but we then also did extensive briefing before the judge. It simply was not an abuse of discretion at this stage of the proceedings to find that the amendment was
due. Could we return to your colleague's last remarks before he sat down? He took the position that his so-called final report really wasn't under the terms of the contract, a final report, because the contract contemplated a year-long monitoring, so they were clearly well within their within the contract to continue to assess the MCI situation and to make recommendations to you.
I think that's based on a misreading of the contract and a misreading of the record. First, Mr. Vigil was asked as to that final report in his deposition, and it is in the record. Is this, and this is the May 12th document, is this a final report pursuant to the contract? And he said yes, that it was. So the plaintiff's admission establishes that. The 12-month period is not a 12-month monitoring period. The 12-month monitoring period is there for the period of future savings. Recommendations, the contract says, are supposed to be provided between 90 and 120 days in preliminary and final recommendations. The monitoring period, then, is the period of future savings, the 12-month period. I'm going to monitor your contracts going forward for the future savings. That's all it refers to. It doesn't refer to the period of time in which recommendations are going to be made. In fact, the contract's very clear about that. It says that recommendations are to be made within 90 and 120 days. And so here's what occurs. The preliminary reports come out and say, I can do better with your MCI contract. You should go out and get some proposals and have some meetings with other carriers. That occurs. What comes out of that? Well, all the information and services that are alleged in the quantum merit claim, but then this final report, which is entitled Voice Long Distance Recommendation. And it couldn't be clearer about what Mr. Vigil says we're supposed to do. He says that he notes our current contract expires in November of 2000, and he, quote, strongly recommends at least four times in this document that Horace Mann accept MCI's current proposal, which would result in them switching not on 12100, but prior to that time.
Well, didn't Utility recommend that Horace Mann wait until the MCI contract expired before switching carriers to avoid a penalty?
They made, and that's one of the things about the ever-shifting recommendations here, they made a number of different recommendations about that. What they said at the MCI is that we should renew before 12-1-01-00. Then in the same document they say, if you want to switch to another provider now, we recommend that you go to Quest and Staples.
I'm sorry.
And then they come back down in the same letter and say, but we recommend you not do it before 12-1-00. So at one point in time, that was their recommendation. At other points in time, it wasn't. It shifted.
Well, is there evidence that Horace Mann was considering, I'm sorry, switching carriers and wasn't aware of the penalty until Utility told them about it?
No, there was no evidence that we were contemplating switching carriers before 12-1-00. So all that is a recommendation that we stay in the status quo.
Well, is there evidence that you weren't aware of the penalty until Utility
There's testimony from one of our people, that they were not aware of the penalty provision at the time. It was pointed out to them, but there's no evidence that we were contemplating that stopped us from a course of conduct. In other words, we had no intention, there's no evidence that we intended to switch before 12-1-00. I might say also, Your Honor, that the savings that are identified here, there's never been any smaller, discrete set of savings here than the savings difference between the old contract with MCI and the Global Crossing contract. That's what's sought in this claim. More, no less.
What would the penalty have been?
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. So we end up with this report, which strongly recommends that we go to Horace Mann. Says it's the best deal that we can get. That we go to MCI. Says it's the best deal that we can get. We then get on June 20th or July 20th this email, and the recommendation's a little bit different than it was said in argument here. It's not switched to another carrier. Here's the recommendation. It's now the recommendation of Utility Audit, Inc. that Horace Mann consider waiting until 12-1-00 and switch to another carrier other than MCI unless the terms and conditions of MCI are acceptable to Horace Mann. So the recommendation is, well, it's heads I win, tails I win, because if you think MCI is acceptable, take that. If you don't think that's acceptable, switch to another carrier. Well, we didn't have any other choice. We had to have telephone service. This is a recommendation that says do something, but it doesn't advise and counsel. It is not at all a recommendation within the plain meaning of that word.
Could we talk about the possibility of future savings for just an instant? Because you seem to concede that future savings might have resulted from their work.
If we had taken one of their recommendations and implemented it, I believe that's right. Actually, their long-distance telephone rates had plummeted.
no matter what we did, there were going to be savings in a new contract. His recommendation was that we stay with our carrier, MCI, a recommendation we didn't implement.
Yeah, I mean, doesn't characterizing the work as information versus recommendation seem like a job for a jury?
No, I don't think so, because it's precisely, all you have to do is look at the contract. The contract talks about it defines the subject matter. The subject matter are recommendations concerning long distance telephone contracting. All of this work, it's undisputed, all of this work was done in connection with performing that contract. And to parse it that way, I just don't think is necessary. I don't think there are any disputed issues of fact. The information and services are part and parcel of the recommendations. How do you separate out that subject matter? And so in this instance, I do not believe it would be an issue for the jury. If there's nothing else, I would simply ask that the district court's judgment be affirmed.
Thank you, Mr. Heidenreich. Mr. DiNardo?
Thank you. I'd first like to just address a little bit the contract provisions dealing with the question on was there a final report required. And the contract says that Horace Mann retains Utility Audit, Inc. to monitor all MCI long distance and local exchange carrier and all phone-related service bills for the period going forward for 12 months. And that's the language that I'm relying on there. And then as far as reports, it does refer to final reports for each location will be supplied to Horace Mann within 90 to 120 days for all locations. But then it says after that, new refunds, credits, and savings reports will be generated as new refunds, credits, and or savings become available. So I think the combination of the 12-month monitoring period with this language dealing with additional reports means that there could be some fluctuation as the monitoring process went on. Also, I'd just like to say that refer to the budget impact analysis done by Brad Nell. We referred to it's in the record at utility audit motion for summary judgment, tab 27 of the pleadings, exhibit 14. And basically, this is after this May 12th letter that they're relying upon. And Brad Nell, who is, again, him and Carol Scholes were basically in charge of this project for Horace Mann, May, June, and July, Brad Nell recognized that utility audit was due a fee of 40% of savings for if it went with MCI or if it went to a low-cost provider. And it didn't refer to a specific provider, but I think there's a recognition there that we would have not been in the position to make this sort of decision without all of the process that we went through at the recommendation of utility audit.
Just exactly what service does utility audit provide? Can you just break it out for me a little bit?
Sure. They are a utility cost consultant.
Right.
They go through, in this case, prior bills. They obtain...
And they conclude that it's just not competitive, right? They look at an old bill and say, you can do better?
Well, there's a little more than that. First of all, they look at the old bills and say, you got charged under your current contract where you shouldn't have gotten charged.
They can determine it's misbilling, is that
right? Right. And they go through and discover that. Then there's a going forward process where they say, here are the competitive rates. You know, here's how you go about getting competitive rates in the best contract.
Do you search that out? Does utility search that out, or does that you just tell somebody to go check for competitive?
In this case, what happened was Mike Vigil at Utility Audit was really in charge of arranging all the meetings, getting proposals. They met beforehand. There's correspondence throughout the record saying, you know, we need to meet with Mike Vigil before this meeting. We need to set this up so we have a strategy. We're all kind of on the same. I mean, that's basically what, throughout the correspondence, there's a reliance on Mike Vigil to provide this sort of expertise in this area to make sure that they're getting the best deal possible. And to say that then they can go through a course of conduct, which is really what the recommendation of a course of conduct here, to go through that whole process and then say, no, you know, we could have saved $600,000 here, but we'll avoid your fee to save $800,000, seems to me to be, as we suggested, not in good faith. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bernardo. Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.